You're listening to the New Point Community Church Podcast. For more information about New Point or to get involved, visit newpoint.org/podcast.
Hello, New Point. We're glad that you're here. We're glad that you're choosing to be with us today, and you picked a great day to be with us because we're beginning a brand new series. And here's what I want you to know. It impacts every one of us here today. Every single one of us. We're going to talk about next. And you say, what do you mean by next? We're going to talk about the next generation. And so no matter how old you are, it's those who are coming behind you. And the question is, how can you and I help them? How can you and I help them? How can you and I serve them? And this is huge. Now, there's a quote out there, and maybe you've heard it. It goes like this. There are people who hope things will happen, watch things happen, and make things happen. If somebody close to you were asked, which one describes you, which one would it be? Are you a person who just hopes things will happen? You're thinking, well, I hope somebody steps up. I hope somebody fulfills that. I hope somebody sees that. Or maybe you are somebody who watches things happen. You're kind of a bystander. You just stand by and watch people do what they do, and you're kind of critiquing them. You're not really in the game. You're a critic. My prayer is that you're this last one, that you're someone who makes things happen. That you don't just hope, you don't just watch, but you get actively involved. Because that's what we need. That's what our world is crying out for. That's what our community is crying out for. That's what our young people are crying out for. And so what I want us to do today is I want us to look at a man, a person, who made things happen. His name was Nehemiah. And the story takes place during the 5th century B.C. Let me give you the background of it. Nehemiah was living in a foreign land, and he learned that his homeland was in dire straits. And it had been that way for a long, long time, for more than 100 years. And they were singing that tune, "Help, I need somebody." But not just anybody. Because people had come and people had gone, and nobody was able to help them. And so they needed help. They needed help from somebody, but not just from anybody. You see, here's what was going on. Things had been happening in such a way over such a long period of time that they couldn't really see how bad things were. You know, we've all been there, right? We just get used to our circumstances. We get used to our problems. And we basically just begin to say, well, this is the way life is. And they lived in those conditions for such a long period of time that they could not imagine anything could be any different. And maybe that's where you are today. Maybe as you look at your family, maybe as you look at your school, maybe you as you look at your community, maybe you as you look at our country, maybe as you look at our world, You couldn't imagine it being any different, because it's been this way for such a long time. Maybe you've developed the attitude that it's never going to change. It's just impossible. And so really, you know, you've kind of given up. You're kind of indifferent about it. And you've stopped imagining. You've stopped dreaming. And that's what was going on in Nehemiah's day. You see, there was a generation there setting in the ruins of Jerusalem. And a generation had become disillusioned with their mom and dad's God, with their grandpa and grandma's God. And I can just imagine the young people there living in Jerusalem. They were tired of hearing the stories about Yahweh. They were tired of hearing the stories about Jehovah. Think about it. Think about that 13-year-old. They're living in the ruins of Jerusalem. They're probably getting a little bit skeptical, because every time the Sabbath rolled around, mom and dad was saying, come on, let's go. We're going to go to the synagogue. And I bet you that 13-year-old wanted to drag his feet or her feet and say, you're kidding me. We're going to that again? You know, if it's true about Joshua that he walked around Jericho 7 times and the walls came tumbling down, if it's true about Moses, the stories that we've heard about Moses, that he could raise his staff and the Red Sea would split open and people would walk across it on dry land, and then Pharaoh and all of his army would come and it would swallow them up. If it was true that David was just a young boy who took a sling and a stone and killed Goliath, why can't we fix our community? Why can't we fix our family? Why can't that happen to us? You're telling me, Mom, you're telling me, Dad, that God is amazing, that He can do anything. But why did He give these other people power to do these amazing things? And here we are, we're sitting in Jerusalem, we're sitting in our hometown in ruins. And it's been this way for a long time. And I believe that student, that teenager, that young person was probably thinking, God's not like that with us. He's not great. He's not awesome. He doesn't move among us like the stories that we hear. And what happened is they no doubt started losing the respect of their mom and dad's faith, because they heard one thing, but they were experiencing another thing. And what I would suggest to us today is, that's America. That's our communities. You know, they've done a study, and what they have found out, that when they ask people to name their religious affiliation, over a third of the people in America puts this right here, nuns. That they have no affiliation with any religion. And it's not because they're agnostic. It's not because they're an atheist. They know the stories. They've heard the stories. Many of them have grown up in church. It's just that they don't see anything. There's nothing gripping about our faith. And they hear us talk about the greatness of God and the goodness of God and the power of Jesus, but they don't see much going on in our families. They don't see much going on in our churches. They don't see much going on in our communities. And this is one thing that I love about Nehemiah. Nehemiah was a man of action. And what I want us to do today is I want us to look at Nehemiah, and I want us to be able to take from him some truths and to be able to say, hey, you know what? This isn't going to continue to happen on my watch. I'm not going to hope things will be different. I'm not going to watch things happen. I'm going to make something happen. And Nehemiah's generation was in desperate need for somebody to step up to the plate and be able to say, you know what? I'm going to stop talking about the things that need to be done, and I'm going to start doing something about that which needs to be done. And so, what can we learn from Nehemiah? You can follow along. You can download the notes on your New Point app and follow along. I encourage you to do that because I'm going to say something that you're going to need to remember. And so let's dive in. Here's the first thing that we learn from Nehemiah, if we're going to be able to make a difference. And that is we have to name the problem. We got to name the problem. We got to have the courage to tell the truth. We got to have the courage to step up and to be able to define the reality that we're living in. We got to get our head out of the sand. You see, listen, one of the first things that a leader does is that they define reality. They name the problem. And this is what Nehemiah did. You see, his brother shows up, and he tells Nehemiah what's going on in his home country, in the city of Jerusalem. And he told Nehemiah what was happening, and he explains it this way in Nehemiah chapter 1. He says, they said to me, this is Nehemiah talking, those who survived in the exile are back in the province, are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates have been burned with fire. Wow. Basically, what he is saying is they're vulnerable. They lack a sense of safety. They lack a sense of security. They're frightened. They're scared. They're ill-equipped to handle what's going on. And he names the problem here. The walls, the gates, they're all gone. And he's naming the problem. And so it is with you and me. We have to name the problem. You say, what's the problem today? Well, let me just give you just one thing, because I could list one right after another. But let me give you the overview. Here's from D.M. Clark. The median age of anxiety onset is 11 years old. Resulting problems include poor school performance, problems with peers, substance use, psychomatic illness, and low self-worth. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a counselor, and I was asking him about this, and he said, do you know the number one reason why grade schoolers go to the school nurse? Number one reason. Ready for this? Anxiety. It's the number one reason why they ask for the school nurse, anxiety. And you can see what that results in. I was doing some reading on this, and they say that 44% of all college students deal with high anxiety. And the type of anxiety that they are dealing with in 1950, we would have had them at a psychiatrist. 36% of all college students deal with depression. They're doubling the counseling centers at colleges. See, that's the problem. The problem is we're not handling life very well. We're not doing life very well. Because our walls, so to speak, our gates are torn down and burned. We're vulnerable to all of the attacks that are out there in our world. And so the first thing that Nehemiah did is he named the problem. And here's what we have to understand. If we can't name the problem, we can't fix the problem. And sometimes step one is just being honest about what is broken. And we have to be honest about what is broken. What's broken in my family? What's broken in our community? What's broken in our world? We have to be able to have the courage to name the problem. Because if we don't name the problem, if we don't acknowledge the problem, we'll never be able to get around to addressing the problem. And once we name it, then you and I have to ask ourselves, so what am I going to do with the information that I have received? Because our young people today are at crossroads. They're at a crossroad. And so do I just ignore it? Do I pretend that it'll go away? Do I get involved? You see, here's what I believe. If our church, if New Point, ignores the problems that are happening in our community, we forfeit our right to have influence in our community. And so it is with you, Mom. So it is with you, Dad. If you ignore the problems in your family, you forfeit the right to influence your kids. You got to name the problem. You got to get it out there, as scary as it is. As hard as it is, we got to do that. That's what Nehemiah did. And Nehemiah continues, says, when I heard these things, I sat down and I wept. For some days I mourned and I fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. You know why he did that? Because Jerusalem had been in ruins for over 100 years. It now was no longer just a problem, it was a pattern. Who else was he going to turn to? Because he knew the history. He knew what other people had tried to do. He knew that other people had tried to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the walls, and they couldn't do it, and they didn't do it. And he says, so when I heard these things, I sat down, and I wept, and I prayed, and I fasted. He goes on and says, then I said, Lord, the God of heaven, check this out, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him and keep his commandments. Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant is praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. And then he gets real honest before God. I confess the sins we Israelites, including myself, and my father's family have committed against you. We have acted very wickedly towards you. Goes on. We have not obeyed your commands, decrees, and laws you gave your servant Moses. What's he doing here? You see, he named the problem, but he realized that the problem was so huge that it was overwhelming. And so what he did is he went back to his God and he renewed his relationship with God. That's what he did. He came back and he says, God, I realize that we've not followed you the way that we should. We've not obeyed you the way we should. We've not given you the right priority that you should have in our lives. And I need to renew my relationship with you. I need to come back and fall in love with you again. I need you to be first in my life if this has any possibility here. Because you're great and you're awesome. And this has always been the case. Matthew records a story when Jesus was walking on earth and he sent his disciples out and they ran into a problem. They couldn't cast out a demon. And so what happened is the boy's father came back and said, hey, your disciples could not cast out this demon. And Jesus basically said, hey, you know what? Give me the boy. And Jesus cast out the demon. The boy and his father went on. And then Jesus said this to his disciples. Here's what he said. He says, "You unbelieving, perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here." And Jesus rebuked the demon, and it came out of the boy, and he was healed at that moment. Lesson 101. Then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, "Why couldn't we drive it out? Why didn't we have authority? Why couldn't we take control? Why couldn't we handle this situation?" And here's what Jesus said, "Because you have so little faith. I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, 'Be moved from here to there,' and it will be moved. And nothing will be impossible for you." Nothing. "However, this kind does not go out except by prayer and fasting." What was the first thing that Nehemiah did when he heard about the walls and the gates and the ruins of Jerusalem? You know what he did? He prayed and he fasted. You see, Jesus tells us the problem right here. Jesus would say this, the problem is unbelieving. And what does it mean to be unbelieving? It means that I'm not connected to God. That's what it means. Somehow, some way, I've drifted from my relationship with God. I don't trust Him. I'm not surrendered to Him. And so Jesus was saying, the reason why you couldn't do that is because you're unbelieving. You're not connected to me. You've drifted. You've allowed somebody else or something else to take place of me in your life. And then he says this. He says, a perverse generation. He's saying you're too connected to the world, that you've allowed other things to come into your life. And so guess what? You have no power in your life. You have no authority in your life. And then he gives them the solution. And here's the solution. He says, pray. What does prayer do? Prayer connects me to God. It connects me to God. That's what Nehemiah was doing. He said, God, I need to be connected to you. And he fasted. And what does fasting mean? It means disconnecting me from the world. It disconnects me from the world, from those things that are wanting to take first place in my life. And so Nehemiah, after he named the problem, what he did is he renewed his relationship with God. So let me ask you something, Dad. Are you too connected to the world and not connected to God enough? How about it, Mom? How about it, leader? You know, maybe you need to renew your relationship with God. Maybe your son, maybe your daughter, maybe your friends need to see a different God in you. That your God's too small because you're disconnected from Him. He doesn't have first place in your life. See, that's why I love that. Help, I need somebody, but not just anybody. I need somebody who's connected with God, who can deliver me from this problem, who can deliver me from this situation, who can deliver me and give me life. And so Nehemiah, he named the problem, he renewed his relationship with God, and then he acted with urgency. He acted with urgency. He didn't sit on his hands. He wasn't hoping for something to happen. He wasn't going to sit around and watch something happen. He was going to make something happen. Look what Nehemiah records here. He says, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today. Not in a month. Not in a year. Not in a decade. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. Who's this man? It's the king. It's the king. Right when he understood, right when he named the problem, he got his relationship with God right, that gave him confidence. And so he started to act with urgency, a sense of urgency. He knew that the stakes were high. He knew what laid in the balance. You see, here's what I want us to get. It's okay to expect a miracle, but it's not okay to wait for one. You say, well, Dwight, I'm praying for a miracle. Go make something happen. That's what Nehemiah did. He said, man, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go and I'm going to stand before the king. And I believe because my relationship with God is right now, I've reconnected with him, I believe that God will meet me there. And so it's okay to expect for a miracle, but it's not okay to wait for one. What gets God's attention is you and I doing something. So Nehemiah named the problem. He renewed his relationship with God and he acted with urgency. And that allowed him to leverage his platform. And that's what we have to do. We have to leverage our platform. Nehemiah declares this at the end of the chapter. He says, I was a cupbearer to the king. What's he doing? What's he saying here? Let me tell you what he is saying. He's letting us know who he's not. He's saying, I'm not a priest. I'm not a spiritual leader. I'm just a cupbearer. I'm just a cupbearer. But I have a platform. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leverage my platform. And all of us here today, we have a platform. And we're called to leverage it. Your platform might be status, it might be influence, it might be resources, it might be a privilege that you have, it might be knowledge, it might be your network, it might be finances, but we're all called to leverage our platform. And that's exactly what Nehemiah did. He said, you know what, I'm going to offer God what I have. And you know what I have? Listen to me. I got a relationship with the king. Who holds the keys to all of this. And so you know what he did? He went into the king and he asked. And he asked big. And so he leveraged his platform and he took a risk. And that's what we have to do. We have to take the risk. We have to leverage our platform and to be able to put it out there and take the risk. You see, Nehemiah said it like this. I was very much afraid. Sure you were, Nehemiah. You know what? You were going in to see the king. And if you're not asked by the king to come into his presence, he can clip your head off. And by the way, never go in front of a king with sadness on your face. You always go into the king with a joyful spirit. So Nehemiah writes, he says, I was very much afraid, but I said to the king. You see, what happened is his courage took over. You know why? Because he had a strong, vibrant relationship with God. He had fasted and he had prayed. And he took the risk. And you say, well, what did Nehemiah risk? He risked a number of things. Number one is he risked privilege. He could lose his job. He had a cake job, by the way. Great job. All he did was, you know, if the king wanted a glass of wine or something to drink, you know, he just tasted it before the king. And as long as somebody didn't poison it, you know what? He had a great, great life. He had unbelievable privileges. He had a position. He had a unbelievable position of where everything was there for him, that he could take advantage of. He had possessions. He not only had possessions, he had power. Because him and the king were tight. They were good friends. And so Nehemiah, when he heard about the ruins of Jerusalem, when he heard that the gates were burned and the walls were down, He named the problem. He renewed his relationship with God. He acted with urgency. He leveraged his platform and he took the risk. And then he got involved personally. He personally got involved. And this is so, so huge. Don't miss this. Look what it says. Nehemiah speaking. Then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king. If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, and by the way, listen to me very carefully. When you have a right relationship with God, he gives you favor. He makes even your enemies your friends. Let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so I can rebuild it. God, I'm not asking you to send somebody else. Too many of us here today, truth be known, we're praying for God to send somebody in our family or in our schools or in our community to do something. And we're hoping something will happen. Not Nehemiah. Nehemiah said, send me. Send me. I want to roll up my sleeves. I want to get my hands dirty. And so guess what happens? It pleased the king to send me. And guess what he did? He didn't send him empty-handed. Read about it in Nehemiah. The king said, what are you going to need? See, what happens is God moves when you and I move. Maybe you're here today and you've been saying, man, I've been hoping that God would move. And God is saying, you know what? I'm waiting on you. You see, it's when your faith and God's faithfulness intersects that you have miracles. But he's waiting for me. He's waiting for you. He's waiting for us to be able to move. And that gets God's attention. And so Nehemiah personally got involved. And here's what I want you to understand. Proximity always changes your perspective. It always changes our perspective. And what you will begin to learn about Nehemiah is he went to Jerusalem and he inspected everything. And as he inspected the walls and as he inspected the gates, guess what? It was true. It was true, and it changed his perspective. And he basically said, I have to do something. Imagine with me if all of us would take on that attitude. At all of our campuses, in all of our communities, in all of our schools, if we would say, you know what? I'm going to name the problem. I'm going to make sure I'm right with God. I'm going to act with urgency. I'm going to leverage my platform. I'm willing to take the risk, and I'm going to get personally involved. Imagine what could happen. Let me tell you what would happen. Our world would be a different place. You want me to tell you what else would happen? Our kids would be different. Our students would be different. You see, here's what I believe. I believe that every boy and every girl needs an adult in their life to show them who Jesus is. Not just to tell them who Jesus is, but to show them who Jesus is. Because their walls have been broken. Their gates have been burned. They're vulnerable. I could go on and tell you all kinds of stats that you know what, 64% of teenagers in the last week have viewed pornography. I could go down the list about alcohol and about drugs and about promiscuity, and it's running rampant. Why? Because they're vulnerable. And here's what I believe. I believe this. There is no substitute in a young person's life for a consistent leader. And that's why I challenge all of us here today. That's why we challenge you to serve every week. Because you see, if you get personally involved, it's going to cost you something. If it's not costing you something, you're not making an impact. It might make you feel good. It might make you feel better about yourself. But the community, the family, still lays in ruins. And so I'm challenging all of us here today. If you're in your 20s, I'm challenging you to step up and to begin to serve those who are coming behind you. If you're a father, if you're a mother, if you're a CEO, if you're a nurse, if you're a teacher, if whatever you are, I'm challenging you today to step up and say, you know what? I'm going to get involved in an intentional way in the next generation. You know, I heard something this past week. You ready for this? People who are 18 to 24, ready for this? If they would get 2 texts a month from an adult, it would increase their attendance at church by 50%. Wow. Unbelievable. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to volunteer in family life. And here's what you can do. You can text the word serve to 330-295-2282. And then the other thing I'm going to ask you to do, we've got camps coming up. I'm going to ask you to give financially. And it's there in your weekly. You can donate to camp. And it'll come up on the screen. There you go. To help send a student to a camp. So that what happens is every single student here, all across our campuses, who have signed up to go, will be able to go. You know why? Because the stakes are high. The stakes are high. And the investment is well worth it. And so let's learn something from Nehemiah. Let's don't hope for things to happen. Let's don't watch things happen. Let's make something happen. Let's do it. It's going to take you and you and you and you. It's going to take me. It's going to take all of us. And I believe if we'll have the attitude of Nehemiah, we just might experience the rewards of Nehemiah. And we're going to talk about that next week. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you for Scripture that has recorded stories like this, that gives us a picture of what you do when a man or a woman or a group aligns themselves with you. That what we thought was impossible, that which we had gotten used to and thought was not able to change, becomes possible and changes. And God, we know today in the world in which we're living in, we need that so bad. And so I pray for me and I pray for my friends and I pray for all of our campuses here at New Point that we would make things happen and we would get personally involved. And I pray it in Jesus' name.
If you want to talk to someone about a decision you've made or let us know how God's moving through this series, visit newpoint.org/podcast. Be sure to stay connected with us throughout the week on social media, and don't forget to subscribe through iTunes. Thanks for listening to today's message, and we hope you continue to realize and reach your full potential in Jesus Christ.